Sarah Brummett is the Suicide Prevention Commission Coordinator with the Office of Suicide Prevention. That's a statewide body. And she joins us this morning along with Scott Lowe Murray, who is the Deputy Director of the Sources of Strength Programme, which is a new suicide prevention programme being implemented in some state schools. They join us this morning here at Community Radio KGNU. Welcome to you both.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you. Good morning.
Well, Sarah, the state has issued some startling new statistics coming out around suicide, some of them being that suicide kills more Coloradoans each year than homicide, car crashes, diabetes, breast cancer, flu or pneumonia. And it's the seventh leading cause of death for all Coloradoans and the second leading cause of death for young people in the state. Can you go over some of these statistics, which once again are very sobering?
Sure. I mean, in 2014, we lost 1,058 Colorado residents to suicide, and that's the highest number that we've seen here in the state. Our rates for suicide are holding steady, but those rates are holding steady at the highest rate in history as well. So right now, we're at 19 per 100,000, and that's how they measure public health statistics. But that's a higher rate than you see elsewhere in the nation.
So what are some of the reasons behind that?
There are several theories out there. Suicide is certainly a very complex and personal issue. But here in Colorado, I think we have some unique characteristics. We're a broad state where there's lots of rural and frontier regions. So access to resources looks different out there than it does on the Front Range. And there's also a very high value on independence and struggling through things on your own. And so I think there's that value that really puts up a barrier for people reaching out and getting help when they are in crisis.
Are you seeing a real rural-urban divide when it comes to suicide in the state?
Well, in terms of where the numbers are coming from, we do see more deaths, certainly in the higher population density regions like the Front Range. But when we compare that to our rates out in maybe the Western Slope or more rural regions, there are higher rates in those rural or frontier classified regions.
Well, I know that men account for more than 75% of suicide deaths, and the age group 35 to 64 years has also got the highest number of suicides. However, the state and the Office of Suicide Prevention is also targeting schools with a new program, Sources of Strength. Scott Lowe Murray, you are the deputy director of that program. Tell us exactly what it is.
Sources of Strength has been around for the better part of a decade. It is new in some of the ways that we are implementing it with the state office. And so in that term, some of the pilot programs that we're doing here in Colorado are new, but Sources of Strength as a whole is a national program that has been around for a number of years.
And is it specifically targeting school age people?
Yes, so Sources of Strength typically works with middle school, high school, and college-age populations, both in school settings as well as in community contexts.
And so why school-age people, given the statistics that are showing that it's certainly older people, 35 to 65 is the main demographic men that we're seeing. What is the reasoning behind school age?
Sure, certainly there are different programs addressing all different age spans among suicide prevention. One of the reasons that Sources of Strength in particular focuses on that younger population is we take what we call an upstream approach to prevention. And so one of the things that we're trying to do, as our name suggests, is we're working on enhancing strengths and protective factors and resiliency in young people's lives. And so we're really trying to move upstream rather than just intervening at a crisis moment, trying to develop strength and resiliency and connection and help-seeking behaviors at a younger age so that when hard times come, whether that's while they're in high school themselves or as they get older and get into the workforce, that they have developed some of those protective factors within their own life and built up that resiliency so that when those hard times come, they have some of those strengths to fall back on.
So how does that manifest itself then in the schools? What does the training entail?
Sure. So the gist of what we do with Sources of Strength is we're training a group of diverse peer leaders from the school, supported by adult advisors from that school or community. And we really feel like one without the other lacks any kind of prevention power. And so we really want to make sure that we're bringing both together in that work. And the core of what we're doing is we're not really training our students to be these junior psychologists to go out and fix all of their friends or solve all of their issues, but rather we're really equipping and empowering them to be agents of social change in their schools and their communities, to create positive norm change, to enhance protective factors, resiliency, trust towards adults, help-seeking behaviors, to create a much healthier, more protective environment for which to go to school and to work and to live.
And so what would these kids learn then if they're going through one of these trainings?
Yeah, our training is highly interactive, and so we spend a little bit of time talking about risk factors and warning signs, but we spend much more time talking about all those protective factors, those strengths, and really having the students teach one another what that looks like. And so rather than us lecturing at them or telling them this is what these things look like, they're really modeling that for one another. And then the training really spends a lot of time doing some planning and some empowering. For that after the training is really where the power of the program takes place, is that in that peer team and that adult advisor team continuing to work together over the course of the school year to engage the rest of the student body in that culture change, in that norm change. And so that training is doing some skill building and creating some of that normalizing process just amongst that peer team, and then empowering them to then carry that forward through the rest of the student body.
We're talking about suicide and suicide prevention here this morning at Community Radio KGNU. In addition to Scott, Sarah Brummett, who is the Suicide Prevention Commission Coordinator with the State's Office of Suicide Prevention, joining us by phone. As I mentioned earlier, Sarah, some startling statistics coming out this week regarding suicide. Scott is talking about, you know, building these protective factors and maybe also identifying some of these risk factors as well, given that there are so many different things that could lead a person down the road to suicide. Are there concrete risk factors that can be identified at an early age so you can really have some type of intervention?
I mean, there are certainly risk factors that we talk about, whether there's a trajectory or something that identifies someone, you know, at a very early age as this is a likely trajectory is not necessarily the messaging that we would want to send. Since we know that suicidal ideation can be just once in a lifetime, can come and go, or can be something someone struggles with nearly every day. But those risk factors that we typically talk about are mental illness, isolation, increased substance abuse, change in sleep patterns or eating patterns, someone saying goodbyes or kind of giving away those prized possessions, a recent crisis that's going on in the person's life and just kind of overwhelming their ability to cope in that moment. Certainly a risk factor is having ready access to lethal means, whether that's firearms, medications or anything of that sort, and certainly put someone at a higher risk if they were to go through a crisis.
Just simply having a gun in the house maybe, or having access to a gun, that's a major risk factor.
Well, certainly. I mean, we know from the studies that when someone's making the choice to make an attempt, the time period that they spend planning can be as short as 5 minutes. And so if you're making that decision to end your life in such a short period of time and you have access to a firearm, the chances of turning back or recovering from that attempt are very low.
So, I mean, if I could maybe paraphrase that you have a less likelihood of surviving a suicide attempt if you're using a firearm than maybe some other method.
Right. Certainly, I think the chances are very low, and we know that people who have made an attempt, about 90% of those people do go on to live happy, healthy lives. So if we can kind of put distance between someone in crisis and a lethal method, then we have a really good chance at saving their life.
Well, as Scott was saying there about working with kids in schools and this upstream approach where before you're in a crisis situation, you're working with young people to try and develop some of these protective factors. You know, I mean, what are some of the major challenges for you, Sarah? You're, you know, part of the statewide strategy around suicide prevention. What are some of the barriers and the challenges to even implement this in a state like Colorado?
I mean, in terms of suicide prevention, especially here in Colorado, what's going to work in a metro area is maybe not going to work in a rural Western Slope area. So you really have to take a look at the community and see what their strengths are. Sources of Strength is a great program that is going to work in no matter what setting it is because it's really led by the youth. But in terms of kind of the across the age span, suicide prevention, we do need those upstream approaches, and we also need the intervention strategies at the time of crisis, as well as the postvention after, if there is a death or after there is an attempt, how do we support that individual, that family, and that community in moving forward in a positive and healthy way.
Scott Lomari, you work in the schools with the kids. I mean, what do you hear about suicide from those kids? I mean, is it something they talk about? Is it something that they've ever thought about themselves?
Sure. Yeah, what we've seen in working with schools around the country, certainly, and what the data shows with youth risk behavior surveys and the Healthy Kids Colorado survey, is that suicide ideation is relatively common. And
so that's just thinking about it.
Having thoughts of suicide, and as Sarah mentioned, sometimes those can be fleeting, sometimes those can be recurring. Making a suicide attempt is actually not as uncommon as we might think. But a suicide death is still relatively rare in terms of some of those numbers, especially amongst teenagers. And so that's certainly, it happens far too often. But I want to be hesitant in terms of how we talk about those numbers. As Sarah mentioned, the vast majority of people who ever struggle with feeling suicidal, and even those who ever make a suicide attempt, do not go on to die by suicide and go on to live healthy lives. And so truly recovery and resiliency are the true norms. And we just want to make sure that's being stated for those who might be feeling suicidal or struggling with that in their own lives. That can be a very hopeless time, and just to communicate that there is hope, and that most people who struggle with that can get better and do get better, and that there are a variety of resources available. But certainly in talking with schools, it is not an uncommon thing for, you know, we really can't go into a small group of students and not have somebody who's been touched by the impact of suicide in their own life.
And are students open about talking about their own thoughts around suicide when you're in these workshops with them?
Yeah, typically students are pretty open to talking about their life experiences. We really try to, you know, Source of Strength is not a group therapy process. It's not a grief counseling process. Not that those aren't very valuable in their own right, but that's just not what our model is. And so we don't spend a lot of time digging into their own suicidality or issues like that, but really spend a lot more time on that upstream side, on that strength-based side, and working on building some of those things. And then we're making sure that as we're seeing those other risk factors or students who may be struggling themselves, that we're referring those out to the proper mental health people within the school, within the community, who have the ability to really follow up on an appropriate level with those students.
We talked earlier about risk factors, and obviously there are so many, and it's very hard to point to one single trajectory. But in terms of protective factors, I mean, we're talking in kind of broad terms, but, you know, resiliency and everything. But, you know, maybe we could distill that down to what does that actually mean for a young person to be resilient against suicide? I mean, what exactly are you talking about?
Sure. So with Sources of Strength, we talk about 8 different sources of strength. And that ranges from family support to positive friends to mentors to healthy activities to generosity, spirituality, mental health access, medical access. All of those have their own evidence base around how they're protective against suicide and a host of other issues. certainly one of the most significant protective factors that we've seen for young people is to have an adult in their life that they trust and that they feel like they can go to and talk to. Actually, a part of the Sources of Strength research study, we're conducting a six-year trial funded by the National Institute of Mental Health. And what that study has revealed is that even if I have a friend who has a trusted adult, maybe I don't have a trusted adult in my own life, but my friend does, that is protective for me, that protection can transfer to a friendship group. And so what we know is that school engagement, that school connectedness, that trust towards adult, those things are all incredibly protective for young people.
And they've been proven to be effective in terms of suicide prevention. And I know Sources of Strength
has
been instigated nationwide for a long time. Have you been able to actually track success around some of these issues?
Yeah, so Sources of Strength has actually become one of the most rigorously evaluated suicide prevention programs in the country. As I mentioned, we're finishing up a six-year trial funded by the National Institute of Mental Health, where we've actually been mapping the social networks of the schools that we're working in to see who are the most effective types of peer leaders, what are the most effective types of messages, how does that culture and norm change happen, and some really sophisticated analysis that we're looking forward to being able to publish in the next year. The nature of suicide prevention is, as Sarah mentioned earlier, we measure suicide deaths in deaths per 100,000. And so to be able to get a statistically significant result or outcome, the sample size for that is quite extraordinary. And so it's very difficult to measure an actual reduction in deaths. But what we can see very clearly are reductions in suicidality, some reductions in attempts, and a reduction in those risk factors, as well as in enhancement in the variety of protective factors that we've been talking about.
And as we talked about earlier, that suicide is just one component in that one outcome, very tragic outcome. But that type of ideation, that type of mental status could also lead to school dropout and drugs and alcohol abuse and various different things.
And
like
those
that.
And those can all be compounding risk factors as well. And so if you've, what we know is that risk for suicide increases amongst truant students and amongst those abusing substances. And so it can have a bit of a compounding effect as well. And so, again, that more universal approach is one that I think has great merit.
That's Scott Lowe Murray. He is Deputy Director of the Sources of Strength program that's now been implemented in many, many schools around the state, including some here in the Boulder Valley School District. He's one of my guests this morning here at KGNU, along with Sarah Brummett, who is the Suicide Prevention Commission Coordinator with the Office of Suicide Prevention. That's a statewide program. And Sarah, we're kind of focusing on Sources of Strength, but there are many, many other suicide prevention programs that the state is engaging with, and some of them are as a result of some legislation. Could you give us maybe a statewide perspective on some of these programs?
Sure. I mean, here at the Office of Suicide Prevention, we have efforts covering the whole lifespan, and so we have a community grant program where we're sending money out to certain communities to do suicide prevention programming, whether that's educating mental health providers on how to recognize the risk, connect people to service, counsel them on reducing access to lethal means. And we also have programs working with hospitals doing the same thing. The Suicide Prevention Commission was created last year through legislation. And in our first year, we've identified several priorities to focus on. We just started a pilot program where we're partnering with emergency departments so that people, once they're being discharged from the emergency department after an attempt or after they've been evaluated for suicidal ideation or behavior, they're connected with the Colorado Crisis and Support Line, which provides continuing follow-up support via telephone. And they can do continuing risk assessments, help connect people to services sooner, and provide that continuing caring outreach during that high-risk time period after someone leaves the emergency department. And so we're really hopeful that we'll see some positive results there and that other hospitals will see what we're doing and see the improved client outcomes for that and really adopt it as a quality improvement protocol.
We talked earlier about access to firearms being a major contributing factor in suicide. I know one of the programs you have, you're actually working with gun shop owners.
We are. We piloted the project in 5 Western Slope counties last year. We just got the process evaluation results a few months ago, and the initial results were positive, and that program is really changing the way we frame our conversations around firearms, which I think is especially important here in Colorado, where we do have a high firearm ownership rate. And so it's using firearm advocates to bring the message that if someone you care about is in crisis, let's think about how to temporarily get those firearms out of the home so that it's safe during that crisis period.
You mentioned, Scott, that asking somebody if they're suicidal isn't a contributing factor. Basically, you're not going to put that idea in their head just by asking it. But if a suicide happens, particularly in a peer group in a school situation, what can that trigger? I mean, is there some kind of a ripple effect when a suicide actually does actually happen in a community?
It certainly can. There's research that shows a demonstrable contagion effect at times, or a clustering effect that could be a potential outcome after a suicide death. Certainly we know that if I have recently lost someone to a death, I'm more at risk, especially if that death was from suicide. So if I've recently lost a friend or a family member to suicide, I have increased risk of suicide. But what we know is that the way we talk about suicide really matters, especially in responding to a death in a situation like a school or a workplace, we need to be very careful to speak about that in an appropriate way and in a helpful way, to make sure that we're reaching out and supporting people who may be impacted or traumatized by that. And so there's a whole host of, there's actually a very large document on responding after a suicide for middle schools and high schools, that walks you through those guidelines of what to do and what not to do, because suicide, unfortunately, is an issue that when talked about carelessly, when talked about incorrectly, we can actually very easily cause harm and potentially create more issues than we're fixing. And so it's very important to talk about that in an appropriate manner. And so, you know, there's, like I said, there's hundreds of pages on ways to do that. But some of the quick ones is just not to romanticize a suicide death or kind of glorify that death. We don't necessarily want to memorialize that death. And we also we want to be very careful not to attribute causes to a death. What we know is that suicide is a very complex issue, and there's never really just one cause. And so to just make blanket statements that you know, the student went through a breakup and so that's what causes suicide, or they'd been bullied and that's what causes suicide, can be very dangerous, because often those are far too simplistic, and they ignore maybe underlying mental health conditions that the student might have been struggling with, or other issues that might have been in play. And sometimes that oversimplification can sometimes cause a negative impact amongst the friendship group or the peer group of that student as well.
Well, Sarah Brummett, Suicide Prevention Commission Coordinator, I mean, what does that mean for the media's role in this? And particularly when we see, say, a high profile suicide, Robin Williams comes to mind, and coverage of that. Do you see a spike? Is there a real concern about how the media talks about this? And maybe even so far as, you know, in an obituary, do you say that person died by suicide? I mean, what about some of those issues for society at large?
I think the very same rationale and reasons would go behind responding in the media as well. And there's certainly research that indicates the way the media reports and responds to a suicide can either increase or decrease risk within the community, the same as a school community responding to a loss within their environment as well. And so there's certain guidelines that the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention has on their website about how to talk about suicide, and it's the same, you know, not romanticizing the suicide itself, not talking about the specific methods or means and how the person died or, you know, what means they used. Certainly, there needs to be honesty about that it was a suicide. We don't want to not talk about the issue since that won't make it go away. But there needs to be a very definite response in how we frame it, even the language that we use. And there's certainly a push to not say someone committed suicide, since suicide is not a crime. It's not a sin. Someone dies by suicide. To try to remove kind of that stigma that goes along with it, both for those who are struggling with thoughts of suicide and those who are surviving a loss of a loved one who may have died by suicide.
Sarah Brummett is the Suicide Prevention Commission Coordinator with the Statewide Office of Suicide Prevention. Scott Lowe-Murray is the Deputy Director of the Sources of Strength Program. We'll link to their website at kgnu.org. We'll also put a lot of the statewide resources and websites and phone numbers at our website. Thank you both very much for being with us on KGNU this morning.
Thank you so much for having us.